Mr. Johnson, is it all right if I call you Dean?
Perfect.
Thank you. For the next 45 minutes or so, we'll have a conversation, mostly a questioning period. But before we get started with that, I welcome invite you to make some opening comments, if you would, please. And then as we get near the end of our time together, I will try to give you a signal that we're maybe on the last question, and then at the end we'll have a chance for a closing statement as well. So with that, I look forward to your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to be before you today. And let me thank each of you on behalf of the citizens of Minnesota and the legislature for serving on the RCAC committee. I know you have been here many hours, and you are volunteers, and we thank you for your service to the University of Minnesota and our state. My name is Dean Johnson. I'm from Willmar. I'm currently a member of the Board of Regents, having been elected 6 years ago, serving in the capacity at the at-large position. The University of Minnesota, in my opinion, is one of the most important state assets we have. I say that because not only its facilities, but its faculty, its staff, but most importantly, the students that attend the University of Minnesota. When I first arrived on the board, we did not have the number of applications we have today. Today, in the freshman class, there were 38,000 that applied to be students at the University of Minnesota. 18,000 of those applicants qualified. About 5,600 gained entrance to the University of Minnesota. So one asks the question, why? Because it's a great institution. It's a great institution of higher learning. It prepares men and women, students, for the future, for the next level of employment, next level of education. So as a member of the Board of Regents, I see a couple of important matters. One is to sustain and keep the University of Minnesota as an asset of importance, not only in the state, region, and country, but worldwide. Oftentimes, we, and under Dr. Brunix, which I served when he was president, he said, we want to become a world-class institution, keeping in mind that our focus must be on teaching, research, and outreach. That is the core mission. And we as regents always must keep that in mind as it relates to our students, the core mission of teaching, research, and outreach. Someone asked the question, what are the duties of a regent? Well, I can simplify them in two parts. One is to hire, encourage, support the president. And if you look at my resume, I reference that. We went through the process following Dr. Brunick's retirement of a national search, perhaps even an international search. And I would say that my fellow colleagues and myself, we did due diligence in the hiring of Dr. Eric Keller. We did things like call many references. I called two people at Stony Brook and visited with them. And what I thought was a five-minute conversation turned into almost an hour conversation. What is this person like? How does he administer? What are his priorities? How does he get along with students and faculty? And these people were willing to offer their opinion. And yes, we had files and we had references and all these things, but I wanted to hear firsthand from a couple of folks whom he had worked with. So as a member of the Board of Regents and as a board, probably the most important thing is the hiring of a president. In a purest sense, we have one employee at the university. That's the president. Because we ask the president of the university to carry out the policies set forth by the Board of Regents in collaboration with the legislature, the governor, and the business and labor community of this state. Now, we know that he has more responsibilities. We have more responsibilities. Our responsibilities as regents, we approve the budget, we set tuition, we grant tenure to faculty, we deal with all matters of real estate, We preside, if we will, in handing out diplomas at graduations, which number some 26 to 28 each year, to include the coordinate campuses at Duluth, Crookston, Morris, Rochester, St. Paul, and here in Minneapolis. So we set policy, and we know what that policy is. Now, something that I think is very important, and that is, what is governance and what is administration? It's very important as a member of the Board of Regents that one understands governance. Governance sets policy after research, dialogue, conversation with individuals, with organizations, with the various colleges, and so on and so forth. We ask the president and the president's staff to carry out those policies. When we start becoming administrators, we sense some problems. And our board right now, we are not administrators. We set policy, and we ask President Kaler to carry out those policies. If there's a problem, we sit down, have a cup of coffee in the open meeting, and we subscribe to the open meeting law, and I'll tell you, they watch us, and that's very good. The business of open meeting is very, very important in Minnesota. So I come before you today to ask for your consideration to be appointed and sent to the Higher Education Committee and thus to the joint session of the legislature so that I might serve the students, faculty in this state in the capacity of a regent at large for another six-year term. Mr. Chairman, I thank you and I'd be happy to have further discussions and respond to your questions.
Thank you. Harriet?
Sure. I actually have a question, or I have two separate questions that are unrelated, and one of them pertains to the amount of time that a regent actually spends on a monthly basis. You know, in the application, we talk about 40 hours per month. How realistic is that?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Porter, it varies from month to month. We know that we have 8 or 9 scheduled monthly meetings, typically all day Thursday into Thursday evening, and then on Friday morning, 7:30 to noon. Hardly a day goes by during the work week that there's not conversation with the president or with the dean or chancellor, other regents. In preparation, I happen to chair the Facilities and Operations Committee, and next week I'll be on the phone with Vice President Wheelock, her support staff, one other regent, Regent Clyde Allen, who's our vice chair, and myself. To the point of how much time, I have an enviable position. I'm a parish pastor of 39 years and 8 months in the same congregation. There's 3 other pastors. They fully understand and have never questioned my commitment or my working at the University of Minnesota. They know that that is part of my profile, part of my life, and it's not been a problem in the first 6 years, and I do not see it as a problem in the next 6 years, provided I'm chosen to be a regent at large again. So there is a time commitment, and each month we get in the mail, delivered by FedEx, the docket material that Mr. Savory is part of that preparation, and you get it, and you better find some time to sit down and read through it, because we fully expect that every regent comes to the committee meeting, to the board meeting, well prepared. Because if you don't, you will miss something. You'll miss something very important. And if you're prepared, you'll have the questions in which to ask and discussion that is more intelligent. So it's a high priority of time management.
And the second question was related to your entry and transition from having a very strong, robust legislative career and then moving to the Board of Regents. If you had to say that there was one surprise, and I'm asking you to tell us one surprise or one key learning from your first year, whether it was, aha, I don't know the Board of Regents did this, or I thought this, but this is what happens, can you share that with us?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Porter, yes. It was somewhat of a cultural change for me. And it took me a couple years to figure it out. And my colleagues knew it, and our staff knew it, because in the legislature, you're elected by, in my case, as a state senator, 70,000 people, and they're your bosses, if you will. Let me make an illustration. If a constituent called and had a particular problem with a permit or whatever it is, in the legislature, you or your staff would call a commissioner or call a deputy commissioner and see if this couldn't be clarified, rectified, whatever. So, Board of Regents, constituents call, ask about a particular thing. It had to do with admissions. I've been trying to get my son into the University of Minnesota. You're now a regent. I've known you a long time. You think you could help? Little did I know, should not call the director of admissions, because the director of admissions now receives a phone call from a regent. Things change. I learned very fast. We go through our board office. We have a wonderful board office with Ken and his colleagues, Brian Steves now, and Sarah Dirksen. We go through the board office and let those folks. They call us back and say, the person in question, their folder, their file has been, will be reviewed again, and they, the admissions office, will call the parent or the student. So, again, I go back to its governance. It's not being an administrator. And I will admit, it took me a couple of years. Now, a couple of my colleagues who I served with, who one of them is still Regent Laura Broad, she sits right beside me. Every once in a while, Laura will say, tell me again how this is going to work, because we are the same mindset, and we remind ourselves, and she's done a wonderful job on the board. And but it's governance, not administration. Okay. I could tell you stories about people calling for basketball tickets, too.
And those probably would not surprise me at all.
We have a process for that.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
David?
Mr. Johnson, that almost wants me to change my question to how does that process work? I'd like to know. That isn't the question. And I mentioned this to you just prior to your interview today, and that is we've had a discussion here about references. Mm-hmm. The references you provided are longtime associates. Some are business associates, others, and in a way, I guess, the pastor of the church is a business associate in a way, but longtime acquaintances and, I think, close personal friends. A little bit different than those of us with longer memories see as your references used last time. These were really business associates, still longtime acquaintances, but associated with your legislative experience. We're wondering this. Regents seeking re-election, now 6 years of work under your belt for the University of Minnesota. We might have seen some more reference to people you're working with in the university setting and how do they feel about your performance on the board. So I guess my question would be a two-part, and probably it's going to be a three-part.
Okay.
How do you evaluate your performance on the Board of Regents? Are there people that we could talk to about your contributions? And then my third part will come after this. It's all right, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fisher, in regard to references, I thought long and hard about, and I believe last time I listed folks like former Governor Wendell Anderson, who I worked with, Governor Arne Carlson, thought about a couple of generals, so on and so forth. And I changed my mind. I said, I'm going to put down three or four people that really know me well. A pastor I work with, have for 10 years, Mr. Strelo, who I played golf with for 40 years, and you get to know somebody when you play golf with them. And the thing about Mr. Strelo, he will tell you straightforward and anyone else what he thinks. And I don't know if you talked to Mr. Strelo or not. Lori Holmgren, been a prisoner of ours for 35 years, was in my confirmation class. And the third, fourth person is somebody that I do business with. And that's the reason, rather than listing state senators or other regents, past regents, which I could do, the four people I listed know me probably as well as my wife of 3 years. That's why I did what I did. And I knew they would be honest about who I am and what I do. Okay? Evaluation. Mr. Fisher, I think the strongest evaluation as a regent is when students come up to me and we have 8 to 10 student representatives. And every meeting, I try to engage with those students informally or formally and ask them their opinion, ask them about tuition, ask them about their life, their goals, their hopes, or dreams. And one of the highest honors about 3 years ago, the student reps asked me if I would meet with them after the meeting and simply talk. And that tells me that being a regent in great part is about the students. And that's what I think is a strong evaluation. The second would be present and past regents that I have served with. I think would be very helpful, and again, an honest opinion about performance.
My second question, I thought I'd do this at one time. Again, you suffer from people with long memories. In 2006, you came before this group and indicated the two most important issues confronting the University of Minnesota then was, number one, competition within a global arena, and two, diversity among university's clients. What have you done and accomplished in the last 6 years to address those particular issues?
First, the competition. I think we're much more competitive, Mr. Chairman, as a university. I would note that the number of students and faculty that are scattered throughout the United States, scattered abroad, teaching, research, and I'll point to one particular project that we were involved in. It's the bio research facilities, the four buildings, dealing with cancer, Parkinson's, diabetes, and the fourth one escapes me at the present time. When we built those buildings, we saw researchers from not only national enterprises but world enterprises wanting to be part of the University of Minnesota. Second comes to mind is the nanotechnology building, which is currently being erected, and we have had applications from what I call smart people from around the world who want to do research and teach in the nanotechnology field. So it's those kinds of things of moving forward. And if I may just be proactive, just looking ahead to the proposal that we voted on most recently under the Minnesota Drive, it's the four proposals of moving the university ahead in clean water, clean food, robotics, and working with the brain. And we're asking the legislature, you know, for some funding in that regard. So not just staying in the same place, Mr. Fisher, but looking forward to making this university, our university, the best in the world. And in regard to the diversity, I think diversity, I learned diversity in the Army, where I served for 38 years. There's no better institution in America than the military for diversity. I'm a farm boy from southeastern Minnesota, Lanesboro, and it took me a while to understand not everyone is a Norwegian Lutheran. Okay.
We all wish they could be, but
I went to Luther College and Core, Iowa, and you know, grad school up here. But it wasn't until I became a member of the military I understood that there's so much diversity in the world of cultures and religions and all. And the University of Minnesota continues by way of hiring a faculty. I believe 5.2% of our student body now are international students, which is a wonderful thing. We try to encourage before a degree is given that a student will study abroad for one semester. And not everyone does that, but there's a high encouragement the way we do our program for that. Have we arrived? No. We have some distance to go. We have a new person that's coming on board in diversity. And that person answers directly to the president, President Kaler. So a number of things that I think diversity adds to the richness of the education experience.
Thank you very much.
Paul.
Regent Johnson, as you know, in addition to the two at-large positions, we're also looking to fill the student at-large position. You mentioned a bit ago about having strong connections with those student representatives, but tell us, if you will, how you now view the student elected regent position as a part of a body of 12, and what should we be thinking about in terms of making the most informed recommendations to the legislature for that very important position?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Taylor, the current student regent, Marine Ramirez, Marine and I were elected at the same time, and if you will, we're classmates. We were on the learning curve together, went through orientation, and have become very, very, very good friends. Second of all, a student representative, student regent, has the same election certificate as the other people and should be treated and recognized as such. Once in a while you sense that, oh, that's the student regent. No, there's 12 regents duly elected by the legislature with the same responsibilities. And the richness that Regent Ramirez has brought to us, just by her chronological age, she's younger, and she knows many students. She was a former employee of the University of Minnesota, attended the University of Minnesota at Duluth, and brings that perspective. So in answer to the question, Mr. Taylor, a young person, a student who has had a rich, full experience at the university and has antennas, if you will, to many of the student organizations, and is willing to speak up for the students in matters of tuition, matters of campus safety, matters of what course offerings are appropriate, what should be looked at, and all of those things. They are the hands-on, if you will, regents, and can offer a great deal. And Regent Ramirez has done that for us.
Thank you.
Margaret.
You were appointed to a very important ad hoc group in the last year, the Executive Compensation and Administrative Transition Special Committee, Regent Beeson, Regent Frobenius. And for my colleagues, it began when the press got light of the departing salary for Athletic Director Joe Maturi. It morphed to President Brunick's salary, his top administrators. You worked and set up new policies. Everyone agrees that that was well done. But there's a broad section of very influential people in this state who believe the treatment of retiring President Bob Brunix was neither fair nor favorable. And so for a president who served 44 years from the time he started as a faculty member and 9 years as president, how would you react to that, question number one? And question number two, as you've had time to reflect on that, what would you have done differently as a member of that task force?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Carlson, yeah, it's still Carlson.
It's still, well, Citron officially, okay. But you're right.
you have described, Ms. Carlson, the situation very appropriately, and we found ourselves as regents in a quite uncomfortable position and knew, because of public discourse and comments, we needed to do something. Okay. Thus, Chair Cohn appointed the three-member task force for Frobenius, Beeson, and myself. First of all, we took our time. We spent a good part of the summer. Second of all, we did, in fact, invite President Brunix, then former President Brunix, to one of our meetings, which I believe either for conflict reasons or just decided, you know, not to. Now, his chief of staff at that time, Kathy O'Brien.
Kathy Brown
came and gave testimony, said, here's the process that took place, here's the reason, so on and so forth. She did a masterful job of explaining on behalf of the university and President Brunix what was accomplished. And I think it's safe to say that our committee or commission or task force and ultimately the Board of Regents did not come away with our fingers pointed at President Brunig's. I don't think we did that. That was not our sense, because we said, okay, that was then, but the new policy going forward is, if this is the severance package is going to be, we want now the board chair and the vice chair to sign off. We want another set of eyes or two. I have talked to President Brunig two times since that. My sense is that he's disappointed and maybe at times hurt by how it was handled after a long tenure here at the University of Minnesota, concluding his career as president. He didn't say that to me, but I could sense it. And we took it very seriously, Ms. Carlson, about not to offend him, but at the same time we needed a policy change to gain the confidence of the public. Would I do anything different? I think the one thing I would have is probably re-asked and asked President Brunig to come and sit before us and say, you know, we're not here, we just want to hear your story. And we want to thank you for your service, but how did you kind of think about this matter? And we're no different in a sense like you. You're a function of the public. We're a function of the public. And the public was raising, you know, questions about what happened.
Very good answer. Thank you.
Sonia.
Well, this is a follow-up perhaps to issues that David started on and Margaret's too. Some people say that being a regent is the most important governance leadership position in the state. At least it's one of the most important. So I want you to talk about evidence of your leadership for the university as a region. Thinking back on 6 years, what are three or four, some small number of ways in which you showed your leadership as a region on behalf of the university?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Cairns, I'm sorry. The first one I believe I've alluded to already, and that was in the due diligence in the hiring of President Eric Kaler, which took an enormous amount of time. Regent Patty Simmons from Rochester was our point person, along with former Chair Clyde Allen from Moorhead, and they advised us and kept us abreast, but many conversations, because we knew the hiring of the next president was extremely important. So that's number one. Number two, I think we continue, even today, to wrestle with the issue of tuition. That's the number one issue that parents and students talk to us about. Keeping in mind that I believe last year over $200 million of scholarship money was available to qualified students, we also know that there's less and less government resources. I am told statistically that one point in time that 40 to 42% of the university's operational budget came from this body, the legislature and the governor. Now we're down to 15, 16%. Mm-hmm. So that begs the issue of tuition and affordability. And I'm sure you know that we have now voted to hold next year's tuition at zero under certain conditions. Mm-hmm. So that gives more people an opportunity at least to attend the university and gain a degree. Thirdly, one that comes to mind from our Facilities and Operation Committee that probably would not be all that important to you, but we continue to hear more and more about why do you need so many buildings in this age of what I call distance learning. We're right in the throes of that discussion right now. And in my file, I have a list of buildings university-wide that have been demolished. 500,000 square feet of old buildings that were not used. And then we ask the question, do we need to replace them, and what needs to be inside of those buildings? Are they useful? Because you build a building, it takes money to turn on the lights and to keep them, you know, keep them functional. So I think that's important matter. Finally, and this is more proactive, I have spent the last day and a half here in the legislature talking to former colleagues and new members of the legislature. It's quite interesting as to the public perception about the University of Minnesota. And that's why I have done it, and I'm going to continue to do it. Right now, the University of Minnesota, we have some heavy lifting to do. There's some things that, I'll just be blunt about it. When the $800,000 athletic North Carolina buyout came, things, people started to call us. In my comments, the president and athletic director told the regents this was happening. A number of us said, I'm not sure you want to do this, but remember I said governance and administration? You, if you think this is the right thing to do for the university, then do it. Then the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post. I just came from an hour meeting with a legislator talking about this very thing. I met with President Kaler. I talked to him on the phone last night. I said, President Kaler, you and the staff really need to come over to the legislature, begin with the leadership, the committee chairs, and have a fuller disclosure of the university's budget. Because we have been criticized for 9% of our budget, I believe it is, for administration. This is a new day in higher education. And all of us, regents, president, need to take another look at it. And so what are we doing? We're encouraging the president and his staff, not doing it for him, but coming to the legislature and the governor with more of a full disclosure and accountability of the budget that's much driven by the tuition that students pay. And I think that is a very important issue for us for the future.
So may I ask a question? I want to dig a little bit more deeply. Let's go back to, say, either the tuition or the facilities work that the regents have done. What is your particular leadership role there? What do you in particular bring aside from all the other regents?
Well, on the facilities, as chair last 2 years of the facilities committee, working with the Vice President O'Brien, who retired, and now Vice President Wheelock, we talk about these things. And we, in our committee, we strategize and we say, if this building comes down, how are we going to utilize the space and where are the students, you know, going to go? It's bricks and mortar and concrete in that regard. I think another area that comes to mind, and I'll go back to the biomedical facility. We had some face-to-face meetings with potential research and faculty members. I met a gentleman who was from Ohio State. Really, it was kind of by accident. And he had much of an interest in coming to the University of Minnesota in the research. And so we sat and we talked. And today he's on the faculty. So there's some encouragement, you know, in that direction. If I were you, I'd push me even further.
Okay. What question should I ask you? I'm willing to push.
Okay. What has set you aside from the other 11 regents?
Yeah. Good.
That's
yeah.
a good one.
Yeah.
Please.
That's what I was
going to
ask.
I think by my background in politics of 30 years elected office, 40 years in the parish ministry, a farm boy, 38 years in the military, that we dealt much with strategy. My last 4 years, I worked on the Pentagon staff. I worked for a three-star general, supervised 750 chaplains of 182 denominations. Our job was to provide religious freedom for men and women in uniform across the world. And the strategies that are involved in that take some work and some thought. I like to think that one of the things that I bring uniquely to the board is a strategy for the University of Minnesota. That strategy is, what do we want this university to be like in 5 years and 10 years and 20 years, long after we're all gone? What legacy are we going to leave? And in order to have a legacy, you need to have a strategy about tuition, course offerings, faculty, research, number of campuses, all of those things. It just can't happen In the military, we call it nation building, such as Iraq and Afghanistan. The military is involved. Nation building. That's what I think regents ought to be about in the University of Minnesota, is university building for today and the future.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that.
Jim has a follow-up call, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try and retain the formality by addressing you as Regent Johnson. To follow up on that, you answered in the last question what my first question should have been, the global relationship between the university and the legislature, because it's so critical, although less so now, but still very critical in many ways, as you know. And you've addressed that. I guess a subset of that is what is the role of the regents as opposed to the university and its administration in that? And then to drill down into the personal, if you will, around this table 2 years ago, we had a discussion, I wouldn't call it a controversy, but certainly a concern about the number of regents that were former legislators or the number of legislators that served on the Board of Regents. And, of course, at the time, you were a sitting regent, and so there was one. And I think the consensus was that adds some value. We chose at that time to send two more names of former legislators forward. And I think the table was a bit concerned that might be too many. And not speaking about personalities, but the general concept of legislative seats, I won't call it seats, but representation and involvement. Good, bad, indifferent, what's the best about it, what's the worst about it, what should we as people sitting around this table this year, we don't have that issue again exactly, but address the issue of a former legislator being a regent. And
Mr. Chair, Mr. Erickson, I don't think it's as important about what a person has done or is doing serving on the Board of Regents as how you handle those responsibilities and how you present yourself. For instance, some say we should have X number of men and women in business, or we need somebody who's in agriculture. That's fine, but I want to know how a person thinks. How do you analyze and get from A to B to C? Now, part of that comes by way of our life's experiences, what we've done. So to say that there should only be two or one or four legislators, I'm not so troubled by that. But it's the way we perform and behave and act once we get there. And I alluded earlier to the fact it took me, honestly, a couple of years to understand that governance. I would also add this. I'd pay tribute to my current colleagues. We have a wonderful, thoughtful, strategic board present time. You know many of them, okay? And I'm hopeful that, you know, after all this the election proceeds, that we'll have additions to that thoughtful, strategic board working with President Kaler moving forward. I cannot recall a discussion about, are you Democrat, are you Republican, are you independent? We hardly ever talk about it, if at all. I kind of know people's political leanings. Get on the Board of Regents, we try to set the partisanship deeply aside. And I have come to appreciate that, Mr. Erickson, wholeheartedly, having come out of, you know, partisanship. So, but to your question, I'm not, should there be two, should be four, should be one? It's the person and how that person presents him or herself once elected. George?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regent Johnson, I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Regent Cohen the other day. Six years you've been on the board. You become, and you were one of those that made the decision, the board members, to hire the new president. You have to work very, very closely with the president. And yet, one of your most important jobs as a regent is to evaluate the performance of that president. How do you objectively, what criteria do you objectively use to evaluate the president when you still have that very collegiate relationship?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sundstrom, there's two processes. There's a formal process, which we do annually. There's a three-member Regents Evaluation Committee. I sat on that, I believe, 4 years ago for Dr. Brunix. It's presented privately to the president, and then it's released to the public. But second of all, working with President Kaler, if there is an issue or a matter that seems to need more questioning or more thought or more research, we have the president's cell phone. He has told us call at any time. May not always answer, but he's very good in an hour or two to get back to us. And we respect the fact he is president of a huge institution, a large budget. But if there's matters that need to have a conversation with the president and the region, and to be respectful and bold enough and straightforward enough, say, Mr. President, I think it'd be good to take a second look at this issue. I've done it. I think other regents have done it. Don't make a big deal out of it. Be respectful. And the president has been very respectful of regents in that kind of way of doing business. Yes, we're 12 individuals plus a president. We have a monthly breakfast, and it's open to the public. And sometimes people say, you know, Mr. President, I think we ought to think about this before it becomes further down the road. So we do evaluate both officially and more informally.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up, please. Regent Johnson, would you just that was one part of it, but the other part was, what criteria do you use to evaluate the performance?
Number one, we receive evaluations certainly from the public. The public speaks loudly and clearly about the president of the University of Minnesota, things that they like and things they think need to be improved. That's number one. Number two, students. We're present on campus quite often, and students will come up to us and make a comment about the president. And most of the comments about this president are very good. And they usually revolve a conversation of tuition. Thirdly, faculty and staff. We do receive emails from faculty and staff, not a great deal, as they feel the president and the deans or the chancellors, you know, have made decisions. Fourthly, it's in this body, the legislature. I visited yesterday with two legislators, and President Kaler had made a visit to them on Friday. This is a good thing. The president representing the university comes to the legislature because, and that's a good evaluation. If there's a problem, we privately would address to President Kaler, would you consider taking another look or the following? That's how we evaluate.
Joanne?
I'll pass.
Okay. And we are nearing the end of our allotted time, but we've had some great follow-up and some good questions, so I think we'll maybe stretch our time a little bit if we can. Shelley?
We were talking about diversity, and you had touched on international diversity. Can you touch a little bit more on domestic diversity, and not only the state of Minnesota, but the country of the United States? What do you see as a diversity there, and how would you like to change the diversity on that aspect with the school?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Buck, are you talking within the United States,
yes,
the diversity as it relates to the University of
Minnesota?
Yeah,
and how you would like to see that changed, or any way that you could improve on the diversity?
Yesterday, Mr. Chairman, yesterday when I was over the Senate, a gentleman, a new state senator, approached me on that very issue and asked to come by his office next week to talk about more diversity, more opportunities for minority students in the university setting. Some of you may recall when we had the General College, that was, may I say, easier for any student who perhaps wouldn't garner a 27.7 ACT to get into, but the General College is no longer there. We have, I think, begun, but a long way to go in the matters of diversity and encouragement, what I call that richness of diversification of the student population here in Minnesota. And I'm confident now with our new person, the Vice President for Diversity, that we will make some strides in the course offerings and, you know, paying attention more to that, because I've heard President Kaler refer to these kinds of issues on a number of occasions. Regent Ramirez has been very vocal about these matters, and of course she'll be retiring now, and we'll have, you know, have new folks. We're okay, but we have some distance to go.
Can I follow up?
Yes.
So how do you stay current on issues of equity and diversity? What publications or what people do you read, academic journal?
The Mr. Chairman, Ms.
Godinez.
The periodical that I read most often is the Chronicle of Higher Education that we receive, and read through that, what is occurring in other colleges and universities. Second of all, visit with students from time to time about diversity and what matters. Thirdly, the academic counselors. I know two of them quite well, and ask the counselors what it is that you're hearing and what it is we need to do in matters of more resources to help our students. Let me put it this way. If someone gains entrance to the University of Minnesota, we have an obligation to the best of our ability to make sure that he or she graduates with a degree, and our goal is in 4 years. And we ought to help that person to the best of our ability, now provided they need to have some initiative themselves, but to provide assistance and encouragement to move forward in life.
Jerry? Forgot I was going to ask now.
I think I got it back.
Regent Johnson, I got more
question. You talked about strategies and that sort of thing, and you have a budget of more than $3 billion, and I know a significant portion of that budget is involved with our medical school, which I'm a graduate of, and our academic health center. Mm-hmm. And yet in the last several months,
last year, we see some things
publicized,
say this is not the same institution as in years past. The standing isn't as well, ratings aren't as good. There are things that you need to fix here,
and I'm sure you hear some of those things as well.
And so what sort of things are you thinking that need to be done?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rogers, Dr. Aaron Friedman, our head person in the medical community, if you will, I think is starting to lead us into a much better path in academic health. We have before us a new $200 million health clinic that the research is being done, the planning is being done as we move into the new year. We continue to have some stress points with the University of Minnesota in Fairview, and Mr. Moody, Chuck Moody, has been put in that position to help us wade through some very difficult situations. I have a couple of region colleagues, Dr. Simmons from Rochester and John Fabinius from St. Cloud, a retired hospital administrator. There are kind of two-point people who say we must move this ahead. And I'll tell you why. If you asked average citizens in Minnesota about the University of Minnesota, one of the top three things you'll hear is about medicine and the university healthcare system. We need to have easier access. We need to have, and we have clinics. We have clinics in Hibbing. We have one in South Minneapolis. We have one in Wilmer, my hometown, a dental clinic. Because the University of Minnesota, the training of doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals, we're good, we're great, and we can even be better. And it takes money, it takes management, and it takes strategy. And I think we're turning the corner in that regard. Because it is one of our pillars of this university, the healthcare system.
Lois, you're my last question on my list here. Are you?
Yeah.
So we're nearing the end. So.
Thank you for taking the pivotal, you know, a pivotal sitting regent time slot and expanding it, Mr. Chair. I have four questions, and I can't ask all four of them in light of that introduction. So I'm going to do my very best to round them into a package. Greater Minnesota, you know from our previous conversation about 7th District, you are Greater Minnesota. You are another part of Greater Minnesota in your growing up years. And you know the brilliance of people who don't have multiple degrees behind their name, as you alluded to in your choice of some of the folks that you chose for your references and from your public service days. My question at its heart, the first half of the set, at its heart is the definition of outreach and the policy around outreach at the university. When we talk about the three-part mission, so readily outreach gets, in my opinion, shrunk to extension. And I'd like, as a citizen, to see outreach tie directly to those stellar minds that are going into the bioscience buildings and those stellar minds that are going into the nanotechnology building and those stellar minds that are going to be addressing the four-part initiative of neuromodulation and robotics and water and food. Now, taking that Greater Minnesota overlay, how do we do University of Minnesota, economic driver of this state, and the connecting and outreach with those stellar minds, that cutting-edge technology, from the definition and policy perspective that a regent action can do?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Jolfson. You're right. Typically, when you talk about the three-part mission, teaching, research, and then you get to outreach, quickly goes to extension. And extension has changed. The extension offices have been consolidated, and their responsibilities have changed. It used to be to make sure that the county fair was run in an appropriate way and cattle judging took place, but it's now youth programs, and it's a whole list of things. University of Minnesota belongs to all the people of Minnesota, and I've had this discussion numerous times with my regent colleagues and people who work at the university. Let me give you a couple of examples that I know best. I live in Turkey Country, Genio Foods located in Wilmer. Some years ago, we were involved in the transition of the Wilmer Treatment Center, 113 acres bought by two families. Today, it's the Midwest Technology Center, 32 new technology companies, and right in the middle of it is the Research Center for the University of Minnesota. It's about to become operational, where research will be done on avian flu for turkey and chickens and other kinds of livestock. Here's the quandary, the challenge we have, to say to professor, to researcher, do you know what? I have some good news for you. You're going to move to Wilmer, Minnesota. Where's that? Well, what happens, and I'm going to use the second, we have the dental clinic at the hospital, and students come out for a three-week rotation. I see these students every morning in the coffee shop, and I talk to them. They love it. They love the practicality and the educational experience, and more than one have said to me, when I finish my degree and become a dentist, I want to move to Greater Minnesota. That's a good thing because one-third of our dentists in rural Minnesota will retire in the next 10 years. So what I'm getting at is these extensions. It's true in Hibbing. It's true in other places. And we're working more and more on these extensions. Now, the natural is medical doctors and nurses. Be trained here and then move to, you know, Greater Minnesota, to Fergus Falls, Moorhead, Wilmer, Winona, doctors are trained at Mayo to, you know, spread us out a little more. I think the present board and certainly myself as a at-large regent, a rural regent sometimes, is to look at those things and make sure that the university is not just here. And you know how you build support for that? Alumni. Alumni that become interested, and I see it in Wilmer now. The alumni group is even becoming more kind of enthused about, oh, there's the University of Minnesota sign. Oh, there's the University of Minnesota. And I think that is a real segue to, you know, to the future. The new initiatives that the president has put forward, that we voted on, clean water, clean food, two of the four major initiatives for the future. That's wonderful. That's much greater Minnesota that we care about. And the university and its research staff could be very, and teaching staff be very, very helpful in those matters.
Correct.
Well, Regent Johnson, thank you for your answers. Thank you for your time, your thoughtfulness. Thank you for your service, not only to the University of Minnesota, but to our state, and for a long career. At this time, I invite you to make a closing comment. And also, I've asked nearly every candidate, if there is a question, and you've already done this once for us, and I thank you for that, if there is a question that you think we should have asked of you, please include that at this time as well.
Okay.
And hopefully an answer.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your questions. And to use your words, Mr. Erickson, drilling down a little bit. I'm pleased that you asked difficult questions because I am a sitting regent. And must be accountable to you, to the citizens of this state, and to the university. I have no problem with that. And I'd like to think I've grown a bit today in this pursuit of a second term on the Board of Regents. The Board of Regents, to be a member, is truly an honor. I think about it because of my humble beginnings. I'm sorry.
Don't be.
Just give me a moment. I grew up in one-room schoolhouse 6 years. I came here on my sixth-grade trip to the state capitol and said, here's where I want to go. I'm not sure how I'm going to get here. I don't know what to do to get here. I can't afford to get here. Every question. Well, the path of life allowed me to pursue some hopes and dreams. For some reason, I can't explain it, the University of Minnesota, its research, its faculty, its campuses, its students, is deep within my heart, like yours, Margaret Carlson. Mm-hmm. I know that about you and many others, Mayor Brady, others. And I see it as one of the hopes for our state and nation of moving us forward in some very difficult times, economically, medically, culturally, diversity. This is the place, the University of Minnesota, and like universities and colleges, through education, where we're going to change society. Oh, there are churches, there are synagogues, there's other organizations. But what I have experienced at the University of Minnesota in my 6 years working with President Brunich, President Kaler, my colleagues, faculty, staff, how bright, intelligent, inquisitive, and curious so many of these people are. And I think about that, translating that into our students. We had the opportunity, my wife and I, who, by the way, some of you know, some of you don't, I lost my first wife to cancer and subsequently married 3.5 years ago. Please don't hold this against me, but she's a deep, deep, loyal fan of the Nebraska Cornhuskers. The first husband and Tom Osborne are very, very good friends. But if you were to walk into her house, you'd see a bit too much red, in my opinion. But there's some gold, maroon and gold as well. But The University of Minnesota, I would say every day that I have been a regent, I try to give something to the university, working with students and my colleagues and President Kaler. And simple way of saying I'm dedicated to the cause, much to learn, try to be collegial with my colleagues, President and his staff, try to be very collegial here in the legislature with the governor. It does no good to just be critical. Let's work together and move this university forward. What I was going to talk about just briefly is we went with the band, University of Minnesota band. We flew in the same aircraft to the bowl game. And while we were gathering at the airport on December 26, it was a cold morning. I wish each of you could have seen the 300-plus University of Minnesota band students come. They were well-dressed, well-behaved, and I said to my wife, that's why I'm a regent. Right there. 300 of fine young people. And I almost remind myself, it's about the students. Whatever their age, whatever their background, wherever they come from, it's what they have up here and expanding that for the betterment of our society. That's why you have a university. And so, Mr. Chair, members, I'm proud to be a regent. I ask for your consideration that I might move forward in the process and continue being a regent of the University of Minnesota. I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.